Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
How are you? How are you?
Good.
You all right?
How are you?
Good. I'm tired as well. Need more sleep. And I think the last few weeks I've been in fake it till you make it mode. You feel that at all? Anybody else feeling that at all?
Every day.
Yeah. Is this going to happen all?
Just for you.
Is it blinking and stuff? Oh, man. As long as you know the dude standing up here to talk gets easily distracted, you're okay. Cool. Gosh, it's good to see you guys. I need to stand up here a little bit because that light's funky. We are in part two of a series that we've called Close Encounters. And ultimately, what we're talking about, how do we do this talking thing better? How do we do this communication thing better? And for those of us that are on this path pursuing Jesus, the way of Jesus, it seems like there's been some examples set for us. There's a lot of people telling us what it should look like. But today, I think we're going to explore a little bit more of what does it mean to be more like Jesus in the way that we communicate with other people. How many of you, like just out of curiosity, show of hands, how many of you really enjoy talking to others? Yeah, and then there are some hands up, right? And there are some hands not up. And for many, many reasons, you all have your own individual reasons why you might not like talking to people. It could be I don't know, maybe you have anxiety. Maybe you think you're smarter than everybody else, and so people are boring. maybe you got too much stuff going on, and you just can't be bothered. But it seems to be an art form. Would you all agree with it? At this stage in life, have you all had experiences with good communication? You know what it hopefully kind of looks like for you, and I would imagine at this stage in life, you've had some bad communication experiences. Close friends, family, loved one, work, colleagues, people you brush elbows with. Last couple years, maybe it's just going off on somebody. You don't even know who they are, but they're online. And you're having communication online with each other. Nonetheless, we believe that there's enough going on in our world today that we should probably pause in the midst of our Mark section and our Mark lesson and spend some time talking about this. There's been some new things added to the culture wars the last couple years. And we are not immune as followers of Christ. And it's trickled into the church at large. It's trickled into denominations. It's trickled into households. And so we think it's a good time to look at this. Last week, if you were here or online, Jenny did wonderful at explaining to us and sharing with us the importance of listening and being good listeners. For those of us that got to participate afterwards, we had some role play with Jenny and Ben, which was quite entertaining if you were able to make it. We worked on our listening skills. We worked on, how can we be better listeners so that we can ask better questions and have healthier dialogue, right? How do we listen in such a way that we're not being quick to come up with a response or a rebuttal or an argument, right? So we spent some time on listening. Next week, Jenny's going to take us into the next step of that, which is, how do we be better communicators, like talking. Today, I'm going to drop a little bit of Enneagram wisdom on us, because for me personally, this is a tool that has really been instrumental and powerful in my life, in my marriage. I don't think it's hyperbolic to say that it literally saved my marriage in terms of how we get along, how we interact. My son sitting here, I'll say it while he's here. But once I started pursuing the Enneagram, when I quit teaching to go study this stuff and whatnot, One of the first responses I got from Noah was, "Dad, since the Enneagram, I feel like you know me better, right? I feel like you know how to like love me better. You know how to like..." Now I'm kind of like adding my own words to it, but this idea of like you know how to like interact with me better, right? You know how to be a better dad. And I don't say those things to elevate myself, because all this is a tool that helps us increase our own awareness. And so today, I want to, in this idea of the art of communicating with people, I'd like to give you a simple little introductory lesson on the Enneagram. And this is where I gotta stop and tell you that on Friday, I had at least 22 slides prepared in true teacher fashion. And as you know, the meme at the church about this particular member of the teaching team is that I will go longer, right? And I'm a little bit more long-winded. But I found myself, because I'm so passionate about this thing, and I have this teaching background, I found myself with this huge PowerPoint for you guys on all the different aspects of the Enneagram and this and that. And I was like, oh, that's dumb. And maybe you'll see later, it will reveal actually part of my own Enneagram patterns of gluttony, of wanting to go too big sometimes. So with that in mind, I want to tell you, I changed this on the fly. And I want to make this a little bit more just accessible and meaningful for you guys. So I want to just teach you the very, very first mantra, if you will, or kind of this wisdom saying that we share in the school that I'm studying Enneagram. Before we get there, I do have a question, and this might be the last time I ask you to raise hands. Is there anybody who is unfamiliar, like you've never even heard this word Enneagram before? Cool. I'm going to assume that there's a spectrum here of like how much we know and don't know, but that's a good place to start. All right, Jeff, let's get into this. By the way, the machine, our computers, in case you guys were wondering about like the lyrics for the song and stuff, like I want to like give a shout out to Jeff, because that's a pain in the butt and that's annoying. So when we switch everything from one computer and he like downloads it to the computer to put up here for display, it changes the order of everything. So just so you guys know, and to give Jeff a little grace, right, or whoever's back there working, like this just happened a second ago too, like we had to go and put everything in order. So hopefully we're good to go and in order. I'd like to start with a quote from a modern prophet. We're just going to sit with this quote for a second. You guys know the song? Everybody thinks that everybody knows about everybody else. Nobody knows anything about themselves because they're all worried about everybody else. Me included. I can tell you before Enneagram, oh my gosh, I knew everything about you guys. And I knew why you made horrible decisions. And usually it was because you made decisions that were not what I would have done. Because you didn't see the world the way that I did. And as a teacher, I even got paid to tell you why your view was stupid. And I got paid to tell you why my view was better. Gosh, I already said I wasn't going to have you raise hands, but anybody else, like, this resonates with you a little bit? Either you've been on the receiving end of this, where someone is telling you exactly what you're experiencing, like, oh, you're looking angry, you're this, this, and this, and they start telling you all these things, you're like, whoa, buddy, dude, whoever, we're going to back off, right? And conversely, maybe you've been on the giving end of this, right? Where you've stepped into a situation and offered unsolicited advice. Told somebody that, you know what you should do? You know what you ought to do? I think that this is a great quote from Jack Johnson that summarizes the last couple years, at least my experience. I don't know about y'all, but my last couple years experience with interacting with people that I thought that I knew and loved in a certain way, I'm finding out we have opportunities to grow. And a lot of it seems to be with this idea that that we know so much about everybody else and very little about ourselves. In fact, I will say this anecdotally, like staying in the high school years for a while as a high school teacher and just watching cohort after cohort kind of constantly stuck in that space of you know, 16, 17, trying to figure out life. I watch that play out in front of me, and then I interact with adults, and I'm like, man, I don't know how much different it is other than we just get more responsibilities and more bills. But there's still this process of thinking that, you know, my way is the one way and everybody else is doing things weird. And I think for me, this is where the beauty of the Enneagram came in. I won't go into the long story, and I think some of you have heard it, but I'll say it briefly like this. When I was introduced to the Enneagram, and it stopped being a parlor trick. Some of you might be into Myers-Briggs or StrengthsFinder or some of these other personality tests, and they can easily be reduced to new ways of identifying ourselves and new labels to hide behind and justify our behavior. But when I got into the Enneagram, was presented to me, what it did is it showed me that, yeah, you're a happy and positive person. I get that a lot from StrengthsFinder and some of these other ones, but what it did is it showed me my motive of why I choose happiness and why I choose positivity and why I rush to that, because I am scared to death of pain. I'm scared to death of being trapped and not having options. I mean, I could feel it as I'm telling you guys that. And the Enneagram showed that to me, that I have a very basic fear. And around that fear, I've developed a strategy. At a young age, I developed a strategy. Our egos all do it. And they develop strategies to navigate our young world. And then when we get older, that setting hopefully changes. We don't live at home forever. And when we get older, we move into different situations, but we're using those same old strategies that we used when we were younger. Y'all tracking with me? And the Enneagram revealed to me, very objectively, it held up a mirror and it showed me my BS. It showed me not only what I'm avoiding, but it showed me how I avoid, and then it showed me a defense mechanism that I use to keep it going. In particular, for my type 7 on the Enneagram, the defense mechanism is called rationalization or reframing. And I can rationalize or reframe anything. A bad thing that's happening, yeah, but this. Yeah, my mom just died, but this is going on, yeah. And it's a really good strategy for a while when you're young. And as you get older, it's not good when I'm in a family. It's not good when I'm married. It's not good when I'm a husband, when I'm a dad, when I'm a teacher, when I'm a pastor. Y'all with me? Those strategies eventually have to go. The Enneagram, for me personally, and why it radically changed my life, is it showed me objectively again, hey, Wayne, here's the strategy you've been using. Here's its effect on you. Here's its effect on other people, and here's a way out. Before I jump in, what I want to get into everybody's mind, maybe a simple understanding of the Enneagram, is that it shows us our ego's strategy to navigate the world. And I like that language because when my ego is at the forefront, it's like being on autopilot, and it's like my ego is in the driver's seat. And what the Enneagram has done for so many people, including me, and I continue to work it, is it shows me when that is taking place, when I'm going into autopilot, and it's teaching me how to take my ego or my type structure and take it out of the driver's seat and put it somewhere else in the car. And I want to tell you this, there's no enlightenment, there's no getting rid of all of this stuff, there's no arriving at all of it, but there is a way to take control. To ground this into scripture with you, if we can get into the next text really quick, or the next slide, please. This is the first mantra. This is the first kind of teaching that we do at my school, and it's kind of a no-brainer. It's kind of a no-duh. But if we can't self-observe, we can't self-correct. Right? It's very logical. If we can't self-observe, we can't self-correct. hopefully a natural question, at least in one of your minds here, is, so then how do I self-observe, right? So how do I increase those self-observation skills? Before I jump into that, this is where I want to tie it into something with Scripture. In Romans, and I'm sorry I don't have this slide up, in the 7th chapter of Romans, Paul talks about this law in his body. I would imagine if you've grown up in the church at all, that a lot of you have heard this. If you haven't, let me kind of just briefly like unpack it. Paul talks and he says, I know the good that I ought to do, right? I know, you guys are with me. We know these good things we want to do. We know how should we should respond to the person online. I know what I want to do when I see the person asking for money, maybe on the street. But then, almost as swiftly as I know the good that I ought to, like just immediately, there's like this other law in our body he talks about. He's like, even though I know the good I ought to do, it's like there's this bad that I do. Like, what's happening inside of me? It's like there's this dual nature, right? There's two things going on. Who will save me from this? This is where I would like to interject. I believe that this is what the Enneagram is for us, is it reveals those other laws written in our bodies. Maybe another way to put it nowadays would be neural pathways, that these are strategies and neural pathways that we have done for a long time. For example, anybody have a bad experience with like a dog when you were younger? Like you got bit by a dog? Okay, so up until that point of being bit by the dog, hopefully, kind of generally speaking, you were kind of a blank slate. Dogs are still fun, ideally, you know, you get along with them. And then one day you had an experience and you got bit or something happened. It registered in your mind. And in that registering, also what happens is a strategy to never let that happen again, right? And so maybe for those of us who had an experience with a dog or something like that in our youth, eventually maybe the rule became, when I see a dog, I'm going to walk on the other side of the street. Just these little rules, and we go through those, and they add, and we keep on doing it, and they're like these neural pathways. They are actions that just come almost habitually to us. Y'all tracking with me? So Paul's talking about, he's like, man, I have this new understanding, and I have this idea up here, but man, there's this other thing going on. What can I do? Right? Who will save me? The Enneagram, my experience, is that it showed me very objectively, Wayne, here is the laws that you have written. Here is the strategies that you have come up with to interact with those laws. And with the Enneagram, my friends, this is the beauty of it, is it then shows us, okay, so now that we know those things, we can reverse engineer. To me, this is the amen. Because this is, if I can observe it, I can correct it. It doesn't happen overnight, but we can increase our self-observation skills. Y'all tracking? So if you can't self-observe, you can't self-correct. Go for it. Pleasure. So the idea of self-observation and self-correcting, again, I want to stand before you and tell you that the person who's talking today, I hold this to be very true about the way that the world works, that this is the system that the divine put in place, this idea of shalom, much more than just peace, but it is a flourishing and abundant relationship. It's not lacking anything, it's wholeness. And there's four aspects of shalom. It's between me and God, me and you, me and nature, and me and myself. And there's wholeness there, and there's this goal and intention. Again, another sermons, we've talked a lot about it here. But this is, again, this is our goal, right? So if we are learning to self-observe so that we can self-correct, so we can have better communication, shalom is the goal. If that's not your goal, that's cool. I don't need to force that on you, but I want you to know that this is, when I'm talking about recalibrating, when I'm talking about putting things back in balance, this is what I'm aiming for. If we can go to the next slide. Thank you. It seems to be that to deny ourselves, as Jesus talks about this, if anybody wants to follow me, you have to deny yourself. It would seem that one would need to know oneself in order to deny the self. I think we've mentioned this before, but the self here, there's no word for ego at the time when this is written, but this is very close in the Greek to an idea of like your ego, of letting go of a certain aspect of your personality that is getting in the way of allowing Jesus, the Spirit, to be the guide, right? So I talked about that like driver's seat. So again, the Enneagram, I believe, is the tool that helps me personally try to live up to this up here on the screen, because it shows me where I'm sitting in the driver's seat, and shows me where I need to crucify my ego, where I need to deny my ego. So in order to self-correct, we need to self-observe. Here's Jesus saying, like, you want to follow me, you got to be able to die to yourself on the daily. So self, what is this idea of self? So we're going to jump into a quick little aspect of the Enneagram. If we can go to the next one, please. Thank you. So the Enneagram teaches that there are nine different kind of archetypes, nine different filters by which we collectively view the world. This is not a static, God bless you, this is not a static system. It's a system that moves the lines on here. There's movement and fluidity. Again, different talk, maybe afterwards if you want to talk individually. But it shows that there are nine distinct different ways that we interact with the world. And I like to refer to these again as, these are our autopilots, right? So I've already told you guys, so I lead, I see the world through a type 7 filter. When I'm not in a healthy place, we'll talk about like constricted and unrestricted in a second. When I'm in an unhealthy place, my 7 is in full throttle. It's autopilot. He's in the driver's seat. I call him King Solomon because he's never satisfied. And when I one of the wisdom things that I really love that was shared with my teachers is they talked about, as you increase in self-awareness and you can begin to see the patterns of your type, so the more you are recognizing that your type structure is online. Is that language okay? That your type structure is long, meaning like, I'm like, okay, I'm doing these things in my mind, I'm kind of, okay, I must be kind of in my space. There's a really wise conclusion, and I've yet to do this preemptively. it's always after the fact, but I'm working on it. But what I begin to recognize is I'm only seeing 1/9 of reality. And I think this is key to this discussion for these 3 weeks. Is when I am in that space and I begin to kind of Jack Johnson you, right? I feel like I know what you're going through and I know what you need. But if I'm coming from a type 7 and that's only 1/9 of reality. And I think that was a really big aha moment for me in my growth, and remembering the teachers telling me that is like, man, I have come to the conclusion of what's wrong. I've come to the conclusion of what you need to do to fix it. And I've come to the conclusion of what that outcome will be. And if I'm in that space, there's a whole bunch of stuff I'm missing out on. Y'all with me? I'm missing out on a lot. I mean, I haven't even checked in with you yet in that scenario. So the Enneagram shows us how we all interact with the world differently. Different filters, just like when you guys go onto Google. Anybody really good at searching, like on search engines? Like you feel like you're like people come to you, right? Like I'm trying to like find this thing, and I don't know how to like type in my search parameters just right because I keep on getting this. Anyways, it happens with my wife and I. But I feel like the Enneagram. I think it's kind of like a good example. There is like it is. We all have our own personal filters with different search criterias. And things that register on my radar, that register as big and important to some of you around that circle up there, some of you are like, that's preposterous. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, Wayne. Some of you have said that to me, Dan. Just kidding. Right? But it's like when you recognize you're in that space, right? And it's like, oh, I'm missing out on so much. And as one who wants to participate in everything, I want to know you fully. I want to know your experiences. I want to know your opinions. If I'm stuck in my type structure, I'm going to do my best to form you into my image. I'm going to do my best to get you to see the way I'm seeing it at the expense of me seeing it the way you're seeing it. Y'all never done that, have you? Let's move on. So the Enneagram, this is where we're going to kind of reside. I'm not going to go into the individual types a whole lot, but the Enneagram teaches that there are three areas, three major areas or centers, and nowadays we call them actually three areas of intelligence or centers of intelligence. Because we know now that we have neural pathways in our hearts, right? We have neural pathways in our guts. We actually have brains all over, not just up here, right? Here's what I love about the Enneagram is, and maybe this is the religious upbringing and the Bible teacher, the Christ follower in me, but there's a beautiful Trinitarian model here. And one of the first things that was appealing, other than this really gentle, objective mirror that was held up before me with the Enneagram, the other thing that was so appealing is that I love the Shema. Do you guys know the Shema? It's from Deuteronomy 6:4. In fact, when Jesus was asked, when he was here on earth, and they asked him, the Pharisees, like, what's the most important law? He responds, like a good Jew, he responds with the Shema. You should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength. Right? These commands I give you today should be upon your children. Talk about it when you walk, when you sit. Like, this is important to Jesus. This is it. And then he follows it up and says, and just as equally as important, right, is to love your neighbor as yourself. So the ultimate goal for the Jew is to love the Lord your God with everything. The Enneagram teaches that we have these different areas that here in this room, collectively, each of us are pretty stinking good in one of these areas. Each of us has an instinct, right? So some of us are in the head types. There's going to be certain things that we consider first that maybe, this is a talk my brother and I have often. My brother's a heart type. I'm not. And I'll often have to remind him, like, oh, yeah, you're really looking at the situation through your heart lens, through the emotional lens, but that other person, they don't have that filter, bro. They're up here. They could care less about emotion. Right? And to someone like my brother Wes is like, oh, well, what's wrong with them? Right? They seem cold, or what is that? And I feel it. But so the Enneagram teaches that there's these three different areas that we're already pretty good in, but we need to learn how to reclaim them. And the reason I bring that up though with the Shema is I love this idea that in the earliest of the text, this understanding of loving God in all those different aspects, right? And so the invitation for us, like I'm instinctually, I go up here, I'm a fear-based person. But the invitation for us is to learn how to increase our emotional intelligence, to learn how to increase our instinctual, like gut intelligence, right? Action, justice. Y'all with me on that? So this is about like learning how to balance those things. So again, with that in mind, that we can't correct if we can't observe, the first thing we learn is that we all of us here are going to lead from one of those areas first, and that will look much different maybe than the person who's next to you, which is an opportunity for a fight, right? That's an opportunity for conflict as soon as you recognize that, right? Two things there. One, I think the beauty of this, like what it's explaining here, this is from my school here, but it shows us the need for each other. Y'all with me on that? I need you. I know that I get stuck up here. I'm really working on this. I need you. I need Bob. Bob who has action, right? He has right action. I just want to sit and talk about it. I know I frustrate him sometimes. Right? Like, oh, let's just go do it. Let's go do it. I need that. So it shows us the beauty. Again, like, here's another verse. Jenny brought it up last week, right? About this idea of the body and being many parts. Right? I need you, family, and I need you to be healthy. I need you to be healthy. I need you to be aware, because I have blind spots. And my hope is that whatever giftings I might have, that maybe it would help you with your blind spots. But it needs to be reciprocated, right? We need each other, family. Amen? Evangelicals, look at you. We could go to the next slide, please. So a quick overview. So it's broken, the Enneagram, the symbol is broken into, like I said, three triads. And the first one we'll start with is 8, 9, and 1. These are types 8, 9, and 1. And these are the body triad. This instinctual center, body-based types, they lead with the body for movement, sensate awareness, and gut-level knowing. there's jokes about it. You've probably been on the receiving end, or you're a mom, so you've been on the giving end of this. But that idea of like mother's intuition, or like if, again, you've seen a movie, you've heard a comedian, or again, maybe you've lived it, but like your mom knows something that like, you're like, how do you know that? How do you know that I did that? Or maybe it's a friend. A lot of times there's just this like, I just knew it in my gut. How crazy that science is telling us now, right? That like, yeah, you knew it in your gut because there's neural pathways there. Our body types are action motivated. These are people who want to get up and move. They are concerned with things being right in the world, justice. There's a certain sense of like security with them. There's a right action for things. And I bring this up because we're going to be looking at some stuff in a little while. And in order for us to observe what's going on inside of us, it might be good if we start to try to figure out where do you feel instinctually intelligent, right? Like, so maybe some of you, you don't need to raise your hands on this one, but maybe some of you do feel like, yeah, that gut, like that is me. On the Myers-Briggs, that might be more of like an intuitive, it's the, not I, that's N, N, thank you. so it might be more of an intuitive, right? Like area. My daughter is one of these. She's all action and she's in a house, we're all head types, the rest of us. And it's very frightening to us sometimes, that big energy, right? But learning how that is and why she gets the big energy, so helpful. Can we go to the next one? The heart center, 2s, 3s, and 4s. I mentioned my brothers in this space. The emotional center, feeling-based types lead with the heart, perceiving the world through emotional intelligence and creating a positive self-image. Their focus is on connection, love, approval, and recognition. When we talk about their focus, we're saying this is the search criteria. This is what is important on their filter. So I know, can I just keep talking about you, Wes? Like, not that you're going to say no at this point, but. So I know when things are, so like it's been funky for our family the last year or so, right? And I know when things are rough, I know that my brother, he needs time usually for like a little bit of like emotional, maybe we're talking about a situation. He needs to talk about why somebody else was cold for a little bit and why they didn't approach him and why he needs to do that for a little bit because he starts with his heart, right? And then through our conversations, we can move up here sometimes. And again, for me, that's the invitation. He teaches me like, okay, hey, I always start with this. Hey, Wayne, let's try starting with the heart first. It doesn't always work out, right? Like we're learning how to do it. But the idea here is, again, is there are some people in your life, and it might be you, but there are some people in your life who are extremely intelligent here. I've been dismissive to you. Hopefully not in particular, but people like wired like that, that used to freak the crap out of me. I used to be very afraid of those of you who have big emotions and experience like the full spectrum of emotion. That's very frightening to me. And I'm learning to reframe and for that to be an invitation, right? And so just knowing that you've got some people in your life that maybe they start in that heart space, because it might be the exact opposite of what you would do. In fact, I'll confess it. I feel like there's a big confession up here today. I have looked at some of you who are emotional. I've looked you in the face probably and told you to stop feeling that or to get over it or don't be so dramatic. Whether or not I've said it to your face, I might have said it in my mind. And again, I might not be speaking specifically about you, but in general, right? Yeah. And then the Enneagram showed me, oh yeah, guess what? There are other kind of people out there, Wayne, who actually have hearts. And they think about emotions before you do. Cool, I need them. I'd like to believe they need me. We'll see. Move on to the next one. The head center, the intellectual center. Thinking-based types lead with ideas, gathering information, figuring things out, and rational decision-making before acting. There's tension right there with my body types. And those of us up here, we can get stuck up here for a long time before we start acting. Analysis paralysis, right? Their focus is on creating certainty and safety or finding multiple options. So again, maybe you've got somebody in your life. Maybe you have somebody in your life that every time you share something, We try to solve it right away because we hear everything as a problem, us mind types. Maybe this is you. Maybe you've gotten feedback from somebody. Maybe they've told you you need to have more emotion. You've been told you're Spock-like. Maybe you've got somebody in your life who tells you to not experience what you're experiencing, to not feel what you're feeling. Very likely they might be a head type, right? And their motive, it's safety and security. Might not feel like that when they're coming at you, when I'm coming at you. Let's go to the next slide. There are a lot of motivating factors out there for why we do what we do, why I do what I do, why you do what you do. These are just a few that the Enneagram reveals that I think we just saw. And as I read this list, I'd like you to think for a second, how do you respond? How do you respond when there is an injustice? You see an injustice, you hear about injustice. Somebody forwarded you an email or an article. How about safety and security when you're feeling threatened? When your family's being threatened? Dramatic effect over there, huh? Is that my son? Yeah. But think about it, right? When your safety is of concern, I'll raise my hand. I've done some stuff I'm not really too proud of because of safety and security. How about fear? Whew, fear is a motivator, isn't it? Man, and I'm not just talking like, I don't know, we could talk COVID fear, we could talk, unfortunately, gun violence fear. What about just like relational fear? I asked you earlier, like some of you didn't raise your hands that you like talking to people. It might be because of fear. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to show up. I don't know. They intimidate me. Or they always look this way. Or they always talk about this. How are you when you're fearful, right? And then connection. When you're noticing a loss of connection, when that registers, you're disconnected from somebody, something, a larger whole. I don't feel like I need to say this to you human beings because we're all having this experience, but when things get desperate, we can do some pretty desperate things, huh? When we get scared, man. Can you go to that next one, please? When we get in those situations and we're experiencing any of those and much more, this is the opportune time for our autopilot to kick in. When I'm feeling fearful, scared, trapped, I've got a defense mechanism. I've got an old law in here. Paul talks about it. I've got neural pathways. I've got strategies. I've got it all, I'm not going to say figured out, but it's all been worked out. It's just autopilot. So the minute I'm fearful, I'm scared, I have a strategy that's going to take place. It's going to be a much different strategy than yours, by the way. And that's where we're going to have conflict, right? If you can go on to that next one. What seems to be happening, again, why it's so important to learn how to observe and so we can correct these things. Eventually, we can catch them before they go online. These things trigger our mammalian part of our brain, the amygdala. We're all familiar with the fight, flight, freeze response. This is exactly what is happening on the inside. When we start to have that conversation with somebody, they mention, maybe it's a different political party. Maybe they mention a hot button issue for you. Something happens inside. There's a system that is going online. And this first mantra of learning how to observe so that I can correct is learning how what's going on inside of me to figure out when that's coming online. Because I don't want to see 1/9 of reality when I'm interacting with y'all. Again, you're with me? If we can go to the next slide, please. Are you guys tired of hearing that? Let's go to the next one. All right, so it's time to practice. So before I show you a few images, here's what I'd like to explain to you guys. I want you to pay attention to what is happening inside of your body, your felt sensation. Very often, I was an idiot in my first classes of this, and we were going through things, and they were saying, okay, Wayne, what are you feeling? And I'm like, I feel really angry and like anxious. They're like, no. Like, what are you feeling? It took me a while. Again, I'm a head type. It took me a while, and I was like, oh, I'm feeling burning right here. I'm feeling shaking in my legs. I'm feeling this tension in my chest. I'm feeling like constricted, right? And so, believe me on this, learning to pay attention to what those experiences are, and then we learn to attach like, oh, so that's hunger. That pain in my stomach, that's hunger. Oh, that's anxiety right there. That squeeze, I know that's anxiety now. Y'all kind of tracking with me? So I'm going to show you some images, and we're just going to be quiet. And I want you to pay attention, your felt sensation, your habit of mind. We all have mental patterns as well. Some of us, it might be instinctual that you go into an old scenario, you go into conversations, you're already planning on how you're going to fix the picture you saw, or how you're going to get back at them. Pay attention to the action that you feel in your body. Maybe beyond just a squeeze or something else like I feel, maybe you feel this like you have to get up and move, you have to do something. Pay attention. We're just starting with observation today. Okay, let's go for it. Show the next one, Jeff. Notice your breathing. Maybe some of you, your breathing actually got shallow or smaller breaths. Maybe you find you're holding your breath. Next one. Again, really wanting to work on our observation skills. Notice if there are thoughts in your mind and if there are accompanying felt sensations as well. Slide. Slide. Next slide. Next slide. Again, pay attention to your breath. Pay attention to your mind. What kind of conversations are you having? Are you problem solving in your mind? Coming up with solutions? Winning an argument? Do you see a face of somebody? Next slide, Jeff. Remember that fear and security and loss of connection and justice are very large motivators. Next slide. Slide. Next slide. So I think the Enneagram is a fantastic start and a fantastic tool, and I would invite any of you to pursue it. It's a fantastic tool in beginning the steps towards self-awareness. Just sitting there and realizing what goes on, and not realizing, just making observations of what goes on inside of our hearts, our bodies, our minds. We don't stop and do this often, do we? I don't want to really get into the topics of these pictures, but I do want to remind you that the men and women in these pictures are also experiencing things in their hearts, in their minds, in their bodies. They came to these conclusions in similar ways that you've come to conclusions about the way you think the world works. Something that came up a lot in the lab work last week after the church service, but was this idea of asking people, what do you mean by that? Or how did you come to that conclusion? You might find out, oh, this bad thing happened in my experience. Oh, safety and security is really important to me. Paying attention to what goes on inside of us is the first step in us being able to die to ourselves on the regular. Because there is a series of events that happens. Once those things start happening inside of us, it's kind of like the domino effect. That's Enneagram stuff later. I can see I'm getting late. I want to stop it at that. But if we can, I guess this is what I want to leave you guys with. If we can increase our ability to observe our own experience, I have found in my life two things to be true. One, I'm flooded with compassion for myself, which is fantastic when you've been guilting the bejesus out of yourself. Anybody with me? Right? I should have done this. I should have done this. I could have been better. I could have done this. Enneagram really helped me to say, hey, you did what you had to do, right? But now you can change, you can grow. And the second thing there, so compassion for myself. I hope those of you that have had a taste of the Enneagram, I know some of you in here have, and I know that's happened as you've learned to have more compassion for yourself. But then as a natural byproduct, And I think this is really beautiful, especially for the Christ follower. A natural byproduct is that we become more curious and compassionate about other people. Because once you realize that you see the world 1/9 of the way, it becomes really curious how other people see the world. And actually, in the midst of conflict, in the midst of these tense times, some well-placed, loving, meaningful, curious questions might get us into some healthy dialogue as opposed to just doubling down and digging in and planting our stakes even further, right? Y'all with me on that? Can we go to the next slide real quick? So again, these are the questions just to think about, like in the middle of that. These are questions for you guys. If you've got a moment throughout the day, maybe on your drive, your routine is to listen to a podcast or the news, and you get triggered. Just stop and ask, what's going on? Okay, I feel this squeeze in my heart. Okay, what am I experiencing? I'm anger. Okay, cool. Guess what? That's anger. That's what it feels like. That's how it registers for me. Some of you, that might be really easy to know what's going on inside, right? Pay attention to what's going on in your mind. Are you starting to plan? Are you starting to come up with ways on how you're going to fix this thing? How you're going to get back at that person? Do you have a vengeful mind, right? But like, we all have patterns of our minds. Being able to acknowledge those things is the first step in being able to correct those things. And I'm sorry. And then, oh yeah, emotions. I did say that, right? So what emotions, what thoughts, what are you experiencing in the body? We're going to keep on having this discussion afterwards where we get a little bit more practical and actually sit there and try to experience it and see what we can feel. We'd be open for more questions, but I hope that I didn't lose you, and that this little taste of the Enneagram, maybe you can see why I think it's such a fantastic tool. I think on that note, I'll pray for us, and we'll get some music back going on. So, Creator God, Maker of the universe, Author of love, Author of life. You're the giver of this gift of life. So we thank you for it. We thank you for the breath. We thank you for the life force that flows through us. I pray that we would be open and willing conduits of your goodness, your grace, your love, your forgiveness, your gentleness, your justice, your truth. Creator God, increase our ability to observe our experience, to show us those areas where we've been holding on tightly, and those areas where we need to let go of our old strategies and allow you to take the front seat. Teach us what it means to die to ourselves. Teach us what it means to crucify our egos. Shalom seems to be the goal. We look forward to it. Amen. Thank you.